So Michel says to me that I have to meet him in his office. So we go into his office and he starts yelling at me in French. Next morning, I walk to the office. My boss comes to me and he says, "What did you say to Michel? I had to fight for your job last night. He was on the phone. He was furious. He wanted to fire you."
When you really try and make true changes within yourself, it's not just in business, not just in family. It just kind of spills over into all areas of your life because you're actually being authentic. It's changing you, not the situations that you're in.
The ones that stay with who they say they are, they keep moving no matter what the market does, no matter what, you know, inflation does, no matter which wars are going on. They are who they say they are.
Hi, welcome everyone to another exciting episode of the Lifestyle Practice Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Derek Williams, with you this week, and I'm really excited for today's episode. Today we have Rich Habits joining us. How you doing, Rich?
Hey, I'm good, Derek. Good to see you. Happy to see you again after, what, month and a half it's been, right?
Right.
The time flies, yeah.
So I recently did an episode where I kind of talked about leadership through learning and being curious. And it was a lot inspired based on my experience at the Ultimate event in Phoenix, listening to your presentation, Rich. And so, you know, I kind of talked a little bit about my own perspective and how I've been able to do that and how I like to continue to do that. So I'm excited to have you on the show today to talk a little bit more about that. For people that are listening, Rich has a pretty extensive background as far as management and training. He was with some other bigger companies that were doing things and working under someone else. And then eventually, Rich, you kind of broke out on your own, did your own thing, and you've been like killing it with taking some of these bigger name CEOs and really helping to kind of break through some of the stigma and traditional mindset and thoughts. So thank you for being here. I appreciate it. I know this is time out of your schedule, and it's a lot of value to all of us listening. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Always a pleasure. This is, you know, so this is one of my favorite. I don't do anything else except talk about this stuff, right? This is what I love to do. So whenever you invite me, of course, I'm going to talk to you about this. So let's see what we can do together.
Yeah. Sounds great. So I would like to start off by saying, by asking the question, like I said, our listeners kind of understand a little bit of the message that you gave. I'm curious with the presentation that you gave, and you talked about staying curious, asking questions and stuff. How much of that is your thought process when you're going into coaching, leading, helping someone to lead others? Is there a lot of components that kind of make up your thoughts, or is that really the main one that guides where you go from there?
Yeah, it really is the main one, right? Because how people speak is how they see the world, right? The world, they basically, we're describing the world around us with our words the whole day, whether we're aware of that or not. Most people are not aware of that. So when I speak to somebody and I ask them, for instance, hey, tell me about the weather, or tell me about your wife, or tell me about your job, what comes out of their mouth is how they see the world, right? Or the job, or the wife, or whatever. And the access to having people see things in a new way is also through how they transforming how they see their wife, the world, whatever that is. And it starts always in language. Language tells me who you are in relationship to that thing you're talking about, right? And most people don't even know that, but I do. So whenever I go sit with a leader, and they, for instance, this guy, he comes to me and he says, "Rich, my leadership team is a mess. They don't do what I say. They're not accountable. They constantly are in arguments with each other. It's a mess. What can I do?" So what I'm hearing is not to jump immediately into action, like, okay, what can we do to change this? But I'm listening and I'm thinking, okay, so he thinks it's a mess, right? If he thinks it's a mess, then probably he's got some judgments against some people. He's probably judging himself for not being an effective leader. So there's a whole world, if you really listen to how they describe, is how they see it. And my first job is to really look at that and to see where can we shift that around. Does it make sense?
Yeah. So how do you, for someone that has not thought through those kinds of things, even for me, like in the last 6 months, realizing, I mean, I think I've always had somewhat of an intentional mindset, thinking, oh, I can choose where I want to go in life. I can choose what I want to do. But in the last 6 months, it's been taking like increased responsibility for exactly what you're talking about, that not only am I responsible for my decisions and where I go in life, but I'm responsible for how I view the world, how I view people. And so I'm curious with for people that you are talking to, and maybe this is good for, you know, for those of us that own a small business and even trying to motivate employees, what do you do to help people to understand that? Because there's so many people, I think, that kind of view things like, oh no, this is what happened, and so this is how I responded because of that. You know, there's not a lot of responsibility. How do you begin to go through that process with people?
Well, there's a key distinction, and the key distinction is ownership versus victimhood, right? That's mostly where I start with people. So I explain to them, look, there are basically two ways of living. There are more ways of living, but in this model, there's two ways of living. You can either be a victim of circumstance, right? So for instance, somebody who says, yeah, I got upset, but that was because you said that. That's why I got upset. So they basically present themselves as if they have no choice, right? You said something about something I did, and then I got upset, of course, because you insulted me or whatever. That is basically, you're a victim. You're a victim of your own thoughts. What people don't see is that I have a choice. No matter what somebody says to me, I can choose my own reaction, right? So I can be in a room and somebody say, you know, Rich, you're running a project, but the whole project is just a big mess. Maybe my initial thought would be, what? What? This is impolite, or they're not respecting me and I need to defend. But that's victimhood. Ownership looks like, wait a minute, I'm feeling a little bit agitated here. Let me see how I can react from a place of ownership, which basically means getting curious. So I might ask that person, oh, it's interesting that you say that, because first of all, it's not my perspective that the project is a mess. I don't hear that from anybody else. So please tell me more. Why do you think it's a mess? Because that might allow me to see something that I'm not seeing yet, you know, exposing a blind spot. And that's the curiosity you talked about at the beginning, right? It's really that curiosity that you have to create, because initially you're not curious. Initially you want to react. What we humans want to do when we feel attacked, we want to respond. But when I take that comment as something that that might help me grow, now I'm in an ownership mode. Right? I'm thinking, oh, there's somebody who has some criticism. Let me get curious. And from those decisions, that way of being, always being an owner, you get to choose your reaction. And guess what? Your relationship with that person improves, because trust goes up, listening goes up, and you might learn something.
Great. Have you read Jim Collins' book, Good to Great?
Of course. Yeah.
The thing that resonated so much with me was the level 5 leadership that he basically talked about. He said that there's a combination of two things, and it's strong will and humility. And when I hear you talking about the initial reactions that come from things of, you know, getting defensive or having certain thoughts and going somewhere like that, that has a lot to do with humility, being open to other people's ideas, right? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, you could call it humility, of course. I see it as just a choice, just a way of living. That's it for me. Let me tell you a story. That's something that happened in my life. So I used to work for a company called Boston Scientific, right? MedTech company. And this was 15 years ago. I was starting right back. No, I came out of consulting. I worked for 6 years. Then I got that job. I was sales and marketing manager for EMEA, so Europe, Middle East, and Africa. So my boss told me that I needed to meet the CEO. And I was like, okay, where is he? He's in Paris. And you're part of his management team now. I said, okay. So I go to Paris, and the guy's name is Michel Dernot, right? Oh, I'm not supposed to say that, but the guy's name is Michel Dernot. And people warned me up front about him. They said, oh, he's very vain, and he, you know, he's not nice. He's just I'm colored, right? See how I'm already influenced? So I go to that meeting. I still remember going in a meeting room, and there are people from Southern European countries. So Spain, there's Greece, there's Italy, there's all these people. And I still remember thinking, I need to be the one here who keeps it rational, because otherwise, people from these cultures, they will mess it up. They talk about stuff that doesn't matter. That was my thinking back then. So already I'm colored in that meeting. So Michel walks in, he sits down, doesn't introduce himself. And my mind goes like, what kind of leader is this? He doesn't introduce himself. Now, this was way before I knew all of it, right? So my mind just starts running on an automatic immediate thought, right? Because we all have automatic immediate thoughts. Those are thoughts we don't even think about anymore, but they color everything we see. You can call them conditioning.
So when you say this is, at this point, you didn't know this. When you're saying that, you're talking about just the ability to observe your thoughts, right? Rather than just kind of getting automatically wrapped in and going down a certain path.
Yeah, exactly. So I was on a full roller coaster. Whatever my mind told me, my mind made, my body made me feel, and I was convinced that that was the truth with a capital T. Michelle walks in, doesn't introduce himself. I get irritated. And what people maybe don't know about me, but I'm Dutch, right? I'm from the Netherlands, and we are very straight in the Netherlands. We can be very direct. And that was me back then. So I was like, who is this guy? And then 5 minutes into the meeting, he picks up a marker and he writes down all these new projects on a whiteboard. And I'm looking at them and I'm like, hey, these are all sales and marketing projects. And I'm just getting more and more irritated because I thought if he dares to give me like 5 projects in one meeting, then he's got something else happening right after he does that, right? That's my Dutchness. Sure enough, 5 minutes later, he says, who's responsible for sales and marketing? And I react like, of course, you know that. Don't be such an ass, right? I'm responsible. I didn't say that, but I said, I'm Michelle. He said, would you mind taking on these projects? And I said, I said, well, Michelle, on your little planet and your universe far, far away, that all sounds very, very nice. But here in reality, on planet Earth, we don't have time for that. Now, the whole room got quiet. And I was very proud of myself because I thought that was a very justified reaction to what he was doing because he's treating me that way. So, you know, I can do that. I can do the same thing. 5 minutes later, room is empty. Everybody leaves the meeting room, which is weird because we were only 20 minutes into the meeting and it was supposed to go for 2 hours. So Michelle says to me that I have to meet him in his office. So we go into his office and he starts yelling at me in French, which is weird. I don't know any French, right? I just felt very justified in my reaction because in my mind, it was like, you do this, I do that, right? So after 15, 20 minutes, he's done. I leave the room. I go back to the Netherlands where I live. Next morning, I walk to the office. My boss comes to me and he says, what did you say to Michelle? I had to fight for your job last night. He was on the phone. He was furious. He wanted to fire you. And I thought, oh, that was the French, right? Now I know what he was saying in French. And I said, well, my boss's name is Jan. I said, Jan, the guy's an idiot. The guy doesn't, he's not respectful. He doesn't even introduce himself. And my boss goes like, Rich, come on. We need to talk about it. Now, this was my first introduction to being an owner or a victim of your thoughts. I was a total victim in that moment. Cost me my job eventually. I got fired from the company. I was the victim of my automatic immediate thoughts. If that would happen today, I would maybe still have those automatic immediate thoughts because they've been conditioned for all these decades, right? So you cannot get rid of them. They'll always be there. But the volume you have control over, right? Whether they're on volume 10 or 2, you have control over that. So I might be in that same situation. Michelle might still give me the projects and I might still go like, what? But now I'm aware of my internal dialogue. And I'm like, no. We're not going to go into that internal dialogue. I'm not jumping on that train. I'm going to stay present. And let's see what else he has to say. And maybe in the end, I might say something like, well, Michelle, thank you for all these projects. They're very challenging and they're very, very good for the future of the company. Can we spend an hour after the meeting and I'll show you what I'm already doing? And then maybe you can help me see what I can stop, postpone to fit in these projects. See, that's an ownership reaction, right? That's a creative something. Now I'm creating the relationship. I'm in communication. The first one got me, my first reaction got me fired. It was insulting. It was judgmental. And I felt very righteous. So I killed that bond, that relationship. See, that's the difference between being a victim of your automatic immediate thoughts or owning them. And this is very important to see because you will never get rid of negative thoughts. Every person on the planet got judgments, we have opinions, we have, you know, but it's so cool to see which ones empower you and which ones disempower you. The empowering ones, keep them. The disempowering ones, you might want to look at them like, what are they costing me when I believe them? And I guarantee there are many disempowering thoughts about yourself, right? Most people have, I'm not good enough, people don't care about me, I'm all alone, people don't like me, I'm not smart, whatever. And those thoughts have an enormous impact on your performance.
That is, I love that story. I mean, I think we can all relate to it. We get in those situations where, again, feel like, well, they did this, and so then I did this. Like, it's totally justified. And not only is it justified, we feel like it's the right thing to do. It's the admirable, you know, full of integrity thing to do because of the situation that we're in.
Yeah.
How do you go through that process with what you're with what you're talking about there. You talked about, okay, recognizing the limiting beliefs that are there, and then to say, is this thought serving me? What is it leading to? And then if it's not, throw it out. Let's replace it with something new. What does that look like, maybe for you personally and for those that you help? Because if those thoughts have been so conditioned for so long, yeah, it may be very difficult to unwind that and to just replace it with something new. So what is that process like?
Well, it's a long process of introspection and contemplation. I've been so thoroughly trained over the past 25 years that for me now, I still have thoughts that I haven't uncovered yet, right? Every day there's something new popping up. But and also with all the teams that I work with, in the beginning, I always say, look, this probably is not going to work, the work that we're going to do, right? And they say, what do you mean this probably not going to work? So because it requires a high level of introspection and looking at yourself. And it's not easy. It's much easier to say, you did this, so that's why I did this, right? That's much easier. And it's also not satisfying. So the people that really are willing to take a look at who am I in certain situations, and is that empowering or not? And then doing that constantly, constantly, constantly for in the beginning, that's you know, it's overwhelming. But people that really keep looking, and then they start seeing that every moment there's a choice to go with your conditioned response or to create yourself in the moment, right? Who you're being in every moment is how you see the situation, the person, yourself. We all have a conversation with ourselves about the world, right? For instance, when we think about the weather, right? I have a conversation going on like, oh, I like cooler weather and blue skies. Other people have a conversation going on like, no, I like snow. Again, other people have like, no, at least, you know, 80 Fahrenheit. What's the truth? There is no truth. It's all perspective. It's perspective, right? And once you start seeing what that internal dialogue is that you have, and by the way, it's not your internal dialogue, right? It's your dad, your mom, your culture, your church, your religion, you know, all that stuff together. You got conditioned. You didn't do anything. You just grew up and you adopted opinions and points of view from people around you. So it's an ongoing process of introspection, always taking ownership of, is this the most empowering perspective that I'm holding, or is there something else? How am I limiting myself in this situation? And from there, you actually introduce choice in your life. Because if you don't do that introspection, there's no choice. You are your automatic immediate thoughts. It's just automatic, immediate. It's under the subconscious. But when you start looking at them, you now have a choice. Do I go with the conditioned thought, or do I create something else?
Yeah, that's great. It's interesting to me as I listen to you, because even with my question with good to great, you know, when I was talking about humility, right? That's one way of seeing it. Sometimes in my mind, when I think of that or think of humility as the right way to approach it, there's almost this underlying thought of, I should be humble. I should, you know, there's almost this aspect of guilt in it that, like, oh, well, if this is the right way, this is the way that I should do it. And your response to me was, view it more as a choice. And you're saying that even as you talk through these things that, you know, with these conditioned thoughts that we have, stop viewing it as what is necessarily right or wrong, right? You know, and it's all subjective. If you can get to that point to recognize that, it then becomes a little bit easier to step away from it and to stop viewing things in black and white, and just to say, oh, it's not black and white. It's A, B, C, or D. Which of them would I like to have? What does each of them lead to? Make the choice and move forward. Yeah. Can it be as simple as that?
At a certain moment, after the introspection, it becomes that simple. Then life is all about choices. I'll give you an example. With my wife, we've been together for 13 years. Who I am is loving with her. Now, sometimes she does stuff or she says stuff that is not invoking a loving reaction from my conditioning, right? My conditioned thoughts might have an opinion about something she says, right? Especially when we have to go somewhere and we have to leave at a certain moment. And then I say, honey, are you ready to go? And she's still upstairs putting on her makeup and getting dressed. My mind has opinions about that, mm-hmm. right? It will always have that. It's been conditioned into me. Now, at that moment, I have two choices. I can go with, honey, you always do this. And come on, we're going to be late. What will these people think of us? I can do that. And guess what happens to our relationship? It goes down, right? And our trust. Or I can say, no, who I am is loving. And coming from a place of lovingness, what I do is I put her above everything else. So I might send the people that are expecting us at a certain time a text message. Hey, you know what? We're going to be 15 minutes late or 30 minutes late. Or I might go upstairs and say, can I help you with something? Is there anything I can help you with? So it's really a choice. Where are you coming from? And it's just a choice. The moment you put morality on it, you have a problem because now you're in your own way, right? You're sabotaging yourself. The only way for me to be more loving is start seeing when I'm not. So she says something and all of a sudden I say something like, yeah, right. I'm like, not loving there. And I apologize. I say, oh, you know what? That's not the reaction I want to give you. I apologize for that. Next time I will be more careful in my reaction. That is the only way to become more loving, by seeing where I'm not, right? A lot of people struggle with being authentic, for instance, right? Authenticity for me is being authentic where you're inauthentic, right? Where you're pleasing people, where you're not telling the truth, where you're sugarcoating stuff, where you're not saying what you need to say or want to say, right? So the only way to be more authentic is saying to myself who I am as a person of authenticity. Now, that afternoon I meet somebody, my boss, and here I am trying to please him. He asks me how I'm doing, and I'm saying, oh, I'm fine, but I'm really not fine. The moment to be more authentic is going like, oh, see, I'm doing it again. I'm not saying what I want to say because I'm afraid of his reaction or whatever. Or maybe I'm afraid that I won't get my bonus or that promotion. Oh, wow. See, in those spots, I'm not authentic. Next time, what I'm going to do is be more authentic. That's the only way to practice. And it's a constant practice. Can you be who you say you are? No matter what the world around you does, no matter who's in front of you, no matter what the news says, no matter what the weather does, can you still be authentic?
So let me ask a follow-up question to that. Sure. So in your situation with Michelle, some people may listen to that and they may think, well, he was being authentic because those were his true thoughts. So is it, first of all, like, is that true? And second of all, you know, does it just come down to changing that inner dialogue to begin with before you decide to become authentic in that way? Or is it, you know, backtracking back to recognizing just the initial things and voicing those things before it gets to step three or four? Go back to step one and talk through that.
Yeah. So in that case, I told you that already I was colored, you know, when I went to Paris and see Michelle, I was already, people put these thoughts in my mind. And then I walked in, I saw people from other cultures that I thought I was better than them. So already I was agitated, right? But it creates an environment in which you can easily get upset. So my reaction to Michelle wasn't authentic. It was to hurt him. It was to make sure that he knew that I knew what I was talking about, that I was not to be messed around with. There was nothing authentic about that. My authentic reaction was, look, you gave me 5 projects. I'm already full. I have a full project agenda. Can we look at what we can postpone and cancel? That's authentic. What would not be authentic would be like, okay, sure, give me those projects. Yeah, oh, thank you. So, I'm so happy that I got 5 more projects. That would be very inauthentic.
Yes.
Right? Because I don't mean that. So there's a difference between venting and being authentic. Most people vent in order to be more, to be superior to somebody else or to be better than, right? And I was trying to be better than Michelle. So that's definitely not authentic. No.
Yeah. I had, so part of when you talked about with your wife, who I am with my wife is loving, right? Like I've gone through that, more recently. I'm getting better and better. And, a couple weeks ago that we were in some kind of discussion and I felt very calm and we're working through it and I'm feeling that we're not making progress. And then eventually I kind of snap and make a comment, you know, I'm like, well, if you were this, then blah, 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 blah. And it's like, immediately there's almost this like little red flag that goes up. That's like, no, this isn't who you are.
Yeah.
But a year ago, there never would have been a flag that would have gone up. Right. It's because I'm doing what you're talking about, changing those inner thoughts and beliefs about myself, that then when there's something that's incongruent, flag goes up and I can quickly correct that rather than, you know, staying in that for so long.
Beautiful. That's amazing. That's the path. Right. And there's one thing I want to add. What a lot of people do. So, for instance, they say I'm loving. Right. They declare that they're loving to their wife. Then they're not. And then they start making themselves wrong. Oh, I'll never learn. 5th time today. Don't do that. There's no need to put yourself down. You're learning. You're in the progress of self-development here. So the moment you do something and that's not who you are, you just simply apologize to the person. Say, hey, look, who I am is loving to you. That was not a loving reaction. Don't explain where it came from, right? Because explanations do nothing.
Right.
But say, next time, in those situations, I know I'm easily triggered with this stuff. I'm going to be better. And I apologize. Just clean it up. Clean it up. Apologize. Repromise. And practice. It's constant practice, Derek. Just practice, practice. And then you keep practicing. And then you're going to get better and better every time. And then you're going to find new things that trigger you. And even deeper layers of things that trigger you. And before you know it, you're a master at making promises and having your internal dialogue have nothing to say about who you are. Who you are is what you say you are.
Yeah.
That's mastery.
Yeah. In that moment, I apologized and I asked her, I said, can I try that again? I didn't want to respond that way. And she was nice enough to say yes. I tried it again with a different response and we worked things out. You know, and initially, a year ago, me would have just not wanted to talk anymore. Would have waited 12 hours of, you know, having like kind of silence and then finally, you know, being able to work through it. And so it's a lot of growth.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing that's interesting, and I mean, this is kind of what you're talking about, I think, is it's really fun to see this growth in ourselves or clients or anyone when I think a lot of people initially kind of categorize their lives, right? They think, oh, when I'm a leader in business, this is my role. This is what I do. This is how I carry myself.
Yeah.
Then when I go home, this is who I am at home. And it's kind of like compartmentalized. And what I'm hearing from you and what I've seen in myself and other clients is that when you really try and make true changes within yourself, it's not just in business, not just in family. It just kind of spills over into all areas of your life because you're actually being authentic. It's changing you, not the situations that you're in.
Definitely. Definitely. And that's the lifelong practice, right? The whole day, what I'm doing, Derek, is I have six declarations that I make. In the morning, I am happy, healthy, and strong, right? That's who I am. I'm happy, healthy, and strong. And from coming to a place of happy, healthy, and strong, I make decisions from a place of, hey, you know what? No matter what I decide, I'm still happy, right? I'm healthy. That makes sure that I make healthy choices for my food, healthy choices for my movement, you know, during the day. And if I take the car or the bike, and I'm strong, which means bring it on. I can take it, right? Not from a place of pumping myself up, but coming from a place of who I am is strong, not weak. So I don't see things as bigger than me, right? I see myself as bigger than anything, so I can tackle that on. Then there are three other declarations. I am in integrity, which means I honor my word. I say what I do and I do what I say. And if I don't do what I say, I clean it up, like we just spoke about. I'm authentic, right? So I am my highest level of self-expression. I don't please people. I speak straight. And if I don't, I clean it up. And I'm self-expressed, meaning whatever comes out of my mouth, you can count on it that it's me. It's not somebody else's dream, right? So those are the six things. So the rest of my day is just practice. So that's where I come from. That's how I program this thing. And then I go into the world and life is going to throw challenges at me to see how much I can stay with who I say I am, right? So here I am, I'm happy. And then I walk on the street and somebody tries to rob me. Am I still happy or do I now become vindictive and cruel and all that stuff? Of course I will defend myself, right? But will I after that decide that life sucks and life is unfair? No. This is just a person with a bad day who wanted my stuff. I come up from a place of happiness. Does that make sense, what I'm saying? Right?
Yeah.
So I'm happy. I'm opening the window and it's raining again. Am I now at the mercy of the rain that my day sucks because it's raining? No. Who I am is I'm happy. And this is not positive thinking. It's just a fundamental choice of how I decide to live my life. It's happy, healthy, and strong. That's where I come from. Right now I have an injury. I go running and I hurt my ankle and I'm in pain. Am I now weak? Am I now, you know, suffering? No, I'm a strong person and this ankle will heal itself, right? So whole life is practice. It's just practice. And life throws things at us, right? Clients that cancel their contracts, clients that don't show up, clients that don't, you know, they don't contact you anymore afterwards. Things happen. People are not nice to you. People cutting you off in traffic. that's really what it really is. It's just a test. Are you still who you say you are? Or are you going to jump on the roller coaster again of experiences and people and stuff that are happening around you? That's practice. Yes. That's the rest of my life. It's practice. And my clients have that as practice too. They lead big businesses. So are they going to be their market conditions, right? Or are they going to be innovative? Are they going to be leaders? And are they going to shift the world? It's a totally different place to come from. The ones that stay with who they say they are, they keep moving no matter what the market does, no matter what inflation does, no matter which wars are going on. They are who they say they are. And guess what? They're resilient and they reach their goals. Where other people are just... Have you ever seen that movie, Glengarry Glen Ross?
No.
No? Oh, you should watch it. There's a scene in there. Just Google it. It's YouTube. Glengarry Glen Ross and the Alec Baldwin scene. So in a nutshell... These people in Glengarry Glen Ross, it's a sales team. They sell plots of land, right, for people. And people don't buy. They don't buy. And the three salespeople, they're starting to convince each other that the markets are bad. So one of them gets a no, and then he gets in the car with the other one. And did you sell something? No, because blah, 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 blah. See, the market is bad. Yeah, the market is bad. And then they say, well, the leads aren't good either. So you see them programming each other that the market is bad and the leads are bad. And guess what happens? When you believe the market is bad and the leads are bad, you think you're going to sell? No.
Right.
You're going to sit in the office with coffee, convincing each other how much it sucks and how much you have to wait until conditions get better. Now, at a certain moment, Alec Baldwin comes in. He's the lead of the headquarters. The headquarters is the top sales guy. And he walks in and he says, oh, you're spinning this whole story that the markets are bad, the leads are bad. It's not true. Because the leads are excellent. I just closed $36,000 in half an hour. And he said, the leads aren't bad. You are bad. You are weak. You convince yourself through your own internal dialogue that it sucks and that you have to wait. He said, it's nonsense. So he fires them all on the spot. He said, the leads aren't weak. You are weak. And that's a harsh example, right? But it's really be careful how you program this thing. Because this thing creates everything. When I'm happy, the world looks different than when I say I'm depressed. The world looks different. It's totally different. Who you're being is everything. And I'm talking too much.
No. I think they're such good thoughts because it's so true and it's so real. And all of this that we're talking through, it's very interesting to me because these are ideas and principles that cannot really be learned conceptually, right? I mean, they can to an extent, but it doesn't become beneficial until you start to experience it. Once you start to recognize some of what's going on, right? There's all of that subconscious lower level thinking. We only recognize the conscious. Once in a while, we can kind of dig deep and figure out, pull out some of those, and we can kind of create those and make those into our conscious thoughts and grow and improve them. But we have to continue doing the same thing over and over again. Yeah. I've been to the point where I think, oh, okay, I understand all my subconscious thoughts, right? But if I did, then it wouldn't be subconscious. So it's what you're talking about with this constant continual growth. It's this idea I've been telling my kids for the last year or two, like when they get down or something, I just say, look, we're just living a 100-year daily experiment. We're just every day we try something and we take what we like from yesterday and try and do it again. And we experiment with something different, but that mentality changes from getting you to think that you have to at some point in your life, you have to get somewhere and then you'll be able to coast. And that's just not the truth. And in essence, once you can make that realization, that distinction that you're never going to get there because you already are, then it just changes your whole perspective on life.
Absolutely. Yeah, when I'm always thinking that I'm happy when, right, or satisfied when, then that's also a way of being. Because when I'm happy when I have an X amount of money, it means that I'm unhappy now.
Yes.
And I can only be happy when I have that. Well, let me tell you, I work with a lot of people who make a lot of money, right? Some of them, they reach the top of their market and they make a lot of money and then they have nobody left to share it with. The wife has left them. The kids don't want to speak to them anymore because they worked 80 hours a week for like 15 years. And that to me is the epitome of sadness, right? That's like, Jesus, you worked so hard and you did all this stuff and now you're all alone. Mm-hmm. The best people that I work with, and they're best, it's not a qualification, they're no better people. My best clients, the ones who constantly innovate, that constantly keep moving, they're not better than anybody else. They're not smarter. They're not more experienced. They're not anything. They're just more clear. Hmm. Whether they're clear about how their mind talks to them habitually.
Yeah.
And they know it. And the mind will still talk to them. They will still have this, but they don't buy into it. I had for a long time, I had this belief that I need to be careful. Something happened in my youth and I got, like, long story short, playing with my niece and with my cousin in the kitchen. We had a lot of fun. We were loud. I was like 5, 6. My mom walks in and she says, "Oh, Rich, are you in love with your niece?" And I just felt so ashamed, like, mom, right? And as a kid, you don't make your parents wrong. You make yourself wrong. So I decided I'm too much. I have to be careful because when I'm too much, I overwhelm people. So I became, you know, I toned myself down.
Yeah.
I decided unconsciously, I have to be careful. So from that moment on, in situations where I wanted to be spontaneous, no. I don't want to feel that feeling of shame again. I don't want to, you know, and then I'm just going to tone myself down. So for the first 28 years of my life in meetings, if there was something I need to speak up about, I wouldn't, right? Because what if I get up and I say something and somebody says something and it hurts as much as what happened when I was 6? So in a way, we're all 6-year-olds with wounds from that age walking around. So now I'm aware that I have this, I have to be careful. That happens, that's in my software. But now when I want to get up, it's still there, but I don't listen to it anymore. And I'm just give my full self-expression without being held back by, I have to be careful. You know, being careful has killed a lot of my dreams when I was younger. And it's just something that happened, like it was maybe a 30-second moment. But that's what we all are. We all have that stuff. And if we don't do the work, it will drive the car. It will have the steering wheel and it will drive our lives, right? Many people I know, they have, I have to be in control. I have to be better than. I have to be superior. People have that in order to feel good about themselves. And it kills relationships. Does it make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I know we're about out of time. I would like to ask you, so I mean, hearing that story, I think probably everyone that can hear that resonates, right? We've all had experiences as kids that live with us for a long time, but we don't recognize it. So my question is, what is your best advice for people how to recognize those things? How did you recognize it? Is it through books? Is it through therapy or coaches or all of the above? Like, if you gave listeners like just a few action item steps for how to begin that process, what would that be?
Well, there's the most powerful program I've ever been in was a Landmark Forum, right? So there's a company, Landmark, and they have a basic course. It's called the Forum. It's 3 days, and it's all about distinguishing that what is under your conscious awareness, right?
Yeah.
And you really go deep in 3 days, and it's a very low level investment. It's like $600 for 3 days, something like that. I recommend that to all my clients. Before they work with me, they have to go to a forum, right? Because I don't want to teach them that. The forum is much better at that. So for anybody listening wanting to dive in, that is the absolute best way to start. And for people in companies, Derek, one more thing. There's a book called The 3 Laws of Performance. Right? Anybody who has a company and wants to know, how can I be a better leader? How can I be more clear? How can I create a business consciously instead of, you know, from by default? That book is great. It's a book by Steve Zaffron. It's the writer, and it's called The 3 Laws of Performance. Excellent book for businesses.
Awesome. Great feedback. Thank you. I've read some books that have come from the Forum and Werner Erhard. I haven't been to the Forum, and now you've piqued my interest, and so I'm gonna look more into that. So thank you.
Absolutely, do it. It's great.
Is there anything after our conversation so far today? Is there anything that you think, man, I wish Derek would have asked this question? Is there anything that you think that you would like to share?
Yeah, there's a quote by George Bernard Shaw, and it says, it goes like this. It goes, life isn't about finding yourself. Life is about creating yourself. And for me, that's the essence, right? look around you, how many people are trying to find themselves as if there's something to find, right? As if someday you open that book and you go like, there it is. I've been looking for this and it's the ultimate answer, right? We all know it's what, like 46 from The Hitchhiker's Guide? It's 40, I don't know. Have you seen that?
No.
There is nothing to find. There is nothing to find. It's all a movie and we're observing it. And that's like nice wisdom if it's theoretical. But if you really dive in and you start seeing, it's just a movie and I created it from my perspective. Now I can create it again from a perspective that I choose. I've seen people who've gone through really bad childhoods, changed their whole life from depressed for 15 years in clinics on medication. They shifted their whole life because they decided to take ownership and see that it's not what happens to you, it's what you make it mean. And that's what I mean by life isn't about finding yourself, life is about creating yourself. Unlimited possibility, you can create anything you want, anything. None.
Thank you.
That's my
I love
word. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. I love that. And I think that's our listeners are going to be familiar with that more in the words of being intentional. Decide what you want to get out of life and go get it.
Absolutely.
Man, Rich, it's been such a pleasure. Really appreciate your time again. For any of those that you are interested in learning more about Rich, you can go straight to his website, Rich Habits. Habits is spelled H-A-B-E-T-S, mm-hmm. richhabits.com. Is there any other ways that other people can follow you or learn more about your services or what you're doing?
Well, the funny thing is I'm acquiring a company right now. So I'm not offering any coaching or consulting.
Oh.
So that's taking up my full time. But people can look me up on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook under that name. I have a website, but there's no coaching and I'm not selling. I have nothing for sale. Let's say that. But if anybody wants to have my opinion about something, just, you know, send me a message or go on LinkedIn, send me a private message. I'm more than happy. You know, I live for this stuff, changed my life, changed the life of many that I work with, and I'm more than happy to assist.
It's very generous of you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you everyone for listening and being part of the episode today. I'm sure that you got a lot out of it. So take care, everyone, and we will see you next time.